should have subtitled this talk On Beyond OSHA in the Spirit of Dr. Seuss, because everyone on the panel has focused a lot on OSHA, and I am too, but I think we need to talk a little about stuff we can do beyond trying to revive OSHA, which is going to be tough. So what's the problem? Obviously, one thing is that a lot of people in this country really don't know anything about, don't care about occupational health and safety. It's something we feel passionately about, obviously, but most people is not on their radar screen. There are fewer workers that are working in jobs that have imminent danger situations. There's more people that are contingent workers or independent contractors. And yet, more construction workers die in the U.S. every year than we have soldiers dying in Iraq. I mean, it's really kind of phenomenal to think about it. OSHA probably will never have enough funding to really fulfill its mission. Standard setting has ground to a halt, and it's bogged down not just by the administration, but also by Congress and by the courts. So it's just an untenable situation, as David and many others have said. Okay, so the first thing that we have to do, I think, is figure out how can we target our inspections better to get the inadequate number of inspectors we have out to the worst places. And there have been a lot of people that have talked about this. David Weil did a very nice study with a lot of recommendations on ways to do that in the construction industry, which has a lot of very innovative ideas, which I don't really have time to talk about. Obviously, OSHA is hampered by the court decisions, like the Barlow decision, which sort of forces them to randomize how they inspect. So I think as a result of that, Congress is probably going to have to intervene at some point to give them the authority to target more effectively. And it may require some sort of electronic reporting of injury and illness rates, electronic registration of where construction sites are happening. Other agencies do stuff like this. For example, EPA requires that every asbestos abatement job, they have to put in a notice of where and when that job is going to start, et cetera. Okay, standard setting. There's been a lot of talk about standard setting. OSHA, it's very, very difficult to set standards now because of all these roadblocks. So what I'm suggesting is they have to focus on generic standards. David mentioned generic health and safety program standard. That's one. I'd like to see a generic standard on safety and health training. We have over 100 different OSHA standards that require safety and health training, but we don't have one that requires overall training for safety and health that talks about the quality of the training, how much training they need, do they have to be retrained, do they have to be evaluated to evaluate the training. All that stuff needs to be done and could be consolidated in a training standard. Very helpful. Health and safety committees. There are places like Ontario, for example, I think one or two states, was it Washington State, maybe? I don't remember. That requires health and safety committees on a job site. I think the most important thing we can do is to require some sort of worker involvement, a joint health and safety committee where workers are actively engaged and actively involved in looking at their workplaces and improving them. Prevention through design. We had a conference here several months ago talk about this. How can we move safety upstream and get the designers who are, you know, or the purchasers, people that are making or that are designing construction sites, that are building facilities, to actually build safety into the design of these projects and these plants. And there's, like, for example, in the healthcare facilities, when you're building a healthcare facility, there was a very nice talk at the Industrial Hygiene Conference about this one facility in Hawaii. When they were designing the facility, they built it so it had patient lifts built into every room, et cetera. Make a huge difference. And I think a standard to improve record keeping and surveillance, obviously there's a huge need for that. I can't tell you how to do it, but I think it needs to be worked on. And improvements in the whistleblower requirements, protections. Other standards for health hazards. I think that, as people said earlier, doing it on a standard-by-standard basis is just not going to work. I believe we need to have less emphasis on PELs and have more emphasis on a control banding approach. If you're doing certain kinds of operations that we know result in high exposures, they have to be required to have controls that are implemented and in place and maintained, et cetera. Ergonomics, I would recommend that there needs to be, obviously, more emphasis on ergonomics at OSHA. Certainly there has been the last 6 years, but in terms of a standard, I would recommend that we start by looking at manual materials handling. It's the biggest part of the problem. my next point on Beyond OSHA is we really need to build public support for occupational safety and health. Most Americans don't realize that 100 construction workers are killed every month in the United States. I think if they did, they would be aghast, and there'd be a lot more support. And, you know, when there's mining fatalities, the public is riveted. You know, there are, you know, 3, 4, 5, 10 miners trapped there, and for a whole week, every day, there's front-page stories about this. Stories about construction fatalities get buried in one paragraph on page, you know, C-15. It really doesn't get the attention it needs, and I'm really happy that Jordan is doing this map of all the fatalities as much as we can get to it. The Europeans are way ahead of us on this. They are doing European-wide campaigns on how to reduce manual lifting, on noise, and they have a whole philosophy that we need to do, you know, public awareness campaigns about this problem and get people to on board. And I had proposed a campaign a couple of years ago to OSHA where we declare a certain week, a fatality-free week, and say, look, we are going to try to get everybody involved to make sure that no construction worker dies that week, okay? And think about how, once you have that focus, how would you do that? Okay, how would you get every construction trade association to hold a meeting the week before and get every construction company to inspect their workplace every day that week, have a toolbox talk every day, to get, you know, have talks at synagogues and churches and mosques, and get, you know, pastors to promote this, get, you know, stuff on television, you know, have TV newscasters talk about this. And every day they're going to say, well, nobody was killed today, you know, and it becomes an awareness thing. And even if somebody, you know, unfortunately does get killed that week, still we can reduce it from 25 a week maybe down to 5, and next year we do better. I think it would be a huge step forward to actually try something like this. We need to tie in with broader causes. You know, it's like I said, a lot of people, it's not on their radar screen, but we have had successes in the past. Look at what's happened with lead. And a lot of that was driven by the fact that there was lead in the homes, lead in the schools, and people saw that kids are affected. It became a national issue. Asbestos in schools. We were working in the 80s on trying to get new regulations for asbestos in the workplace. The asbestos in schools legislation really helped drive that, make it a broader issue. Right to know. When right to know laws were passed, they were passed as community right to know laws because the community had an interest in this, and that helped workers as well. And I mean, I could give other examples. In Massachusetts, they're training building inspectors. The Department of Health, Tish Davis and others, are training building inspectors to actually go and look for hazards. We are also we're working on work zone safety with the state highway transportation officials, state DOTs, try to look at improve worker safety in work zones. Walter is doing a project in New York City. New York City, they get 50,000 complaints a year about construction noise. So the city is now cracking down and trying to quiet job sites, and we're trying to help them by reducing noise levels to workers. We're also talking about starting a campaign to prevent construction workers from being backed over by dump trucks and other construction trucks. It's probably about 25 workers a year killed by being backed over by construction trucks. And there are campaigns that exist to try to prevent kids from being backed over by parents, for example, who, you know, are backing up their vehicle and they can't see the kid behind their car. But now with the technology we have for video cameras and videos in vehicles and radar systems, there's simple ways to prevent this. Okay. Another thing I think we have to do is impress on owners, people that own facilities, own plants, that own construction projects, building projects. They need to set policies to require health and safety in their job sites and make these flow down to subcontractors, to suppliers. The auto companies are doing this. Intel is doing this on their construction projects. General contractors, many of them set requirements that their subcontractors have to have equivalent safety programs in place and do oversight. Some of the states in Rhode Island and Massachusetts and New Hampshire and Connecticut, we now have a requirement that on all construction projects funded by the state, they have to require the OSHA 10-hour program for everybody on the site. And, you know, the whole movement to pre-qualify subcontractors on job sites is very helpful, I think. It's made a huge difference. And I think we have to get the larger companies to force force these requirements down on the smaller companies, because otherwise the smaller companies may not do it. In construction, I think it's 95% of all companies have less than 20 employees. So, okay, I think we have to approach this differently for different types of companies. I mean, we have on the top, there are construction companies that have just tremendous, wonderful safety programs. And maybe it's 5% of those companies that really strive for excellence. We need to get them to mentor other companies, do demonstration projects of how to do it, et cetera. Then there's a large percentage of companies that have good programs, but really are not at the top of the heap, that really have a lot of room for improvement. You know, they have to justify everything to management, cost justify it. We need to help them figure out how they can change the culture in their companies and give them assistance in doing that and improving. Then there's a lot of companies, probably 45%, 50%, I don't know what these figures really are, but I'm just guessing, that really are trying to sort of get by and do what the minimum is, what OSHA requires, so they don't get a citation. And there we probably need more enforcement, but I think we also need to educate them about what the risks are of doing of taking this approach and the potential consequences and as to why they need to change their culture and do a lot better. And then of course there's the bottom feeders, you know, maybe 10% of companies that really don't care, that are waiting, accidents waiting to happen, and they really need to be hit by strong targeted enforcement. So, lastly, I want to talk a little bit about the social marketing approach. This is where I'm coming around to after 27 years of doing this. I'm finally figuring out a little bit for myself what I want to do is think about how do we basically convince employers that there's something in this for them. I mean, obviously you have to hit over the head the employers that don't want to do it. But for those that want to do it or are interested, have an open mind, we need to show them what's in it for them, how there is a return on investment for most of these changes, particularly for safety hazards, and talk about some of the broader benefits like improved productivity, improved worker morale, and the indirect costs. For health hazards, for chronic health and safety problems, it's really difficult to do that. And that's where you need a standard or enforcement, particularly when you have a high turnover workforce like in construction or contingent workers. And I think we also have to make the moral argument, what Michael Lerner calls the new bottom line, or what Paul O'Neill talks about a lot. I think we have to, when I talk to companies that have really good safety programs and I say to them, well, why are you doing this? They don't say to me, well, because this is going to save me lots of money. They say, because I had somebody killed on my job site X number of years ago, and I said, I'm never going to let that happen again. And a lot of these are small companies, and I think the use of personal stories to help people really understand what the impacts are of these injuries and illnesses is tremendous. We're doing this now at the laborers some. And I think we have to create this new bottom line where it's unacceptable for people to be injured on the job. Paul O'Neill said we should yank the business license of anyone who can't meet minimum standards for safety and health in the workplace. I just think a lot of these injuries and illnesses are not visible, and I think the more we can make them visible and implore employers to understand the moral imperative, the better off we're going to be. So thanks very much. And I